and welcome to another Meta Media production of JW on Purpose with your host, JW Najarian, as he interviews and discusses business, finance, self-development, and lifestyle. Hello, everybody. This is JW Najarian, and we're here today with Lisa McCarthy. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. How are you?
Very good. Lisa McCarthy is an old friend, and for those of you that don't know her, she's an old friend of mine. We've known each other for a long time, and I have Lisa on today for two reasons, Lisa. First of all, she's an inventor, and she's taken her product pretty far to market, and wanted to go over with her, you know, how does that happen, you know, trying to figure out some of the pitfalls and some of the things and maybe some great tips that other people can use who have products and want to try to bring them to market. Maybe Lisa has some insight on how to help them. And also, her product deals with positive affirmation, and I think that in itself is just a great topic. So, Lisa, first of all, positive affirmations. How did you find out about them, and how do they work for you that got you so excited?
Well, basically, I've come through a lot of different things in my life and was introduced to affirmations at one of the low points and started doing them and found them difficult to read, keep eye contact. So I came up with a device that will allow you to hear your affirmations and actually have them be effective for you. And for me, saying positive things to myself was something that was never done by anyone outside of me. So it was a really big learning experience, and it's actually given me the courage to keep moving forward through this process, bring this product out for everyone.
Well, that's really cool. You know, we've known each other a long time, and years ago, and it's funny that everything comes full circle, especially with friends like you. Years ago, I was in a major depression. I couldn't leave the house. I couldn't pay my bills. I couldn't get a job. I was at that one of those depression points where nothing was working for me. And I found an old Les Brown tape that my mother had had. And don't ask me why I stuck it in the recorder or what the heck was going on. And he started talking his stuff about his mama and
yep.
Motivational talk. And it gave me the strength to get up.
Well, one of the things that he always says is, if you can see up, you can get up. And I truly believe that. Les has got powerful lessons.
And if so, I grabbed Og Mandino, Dr. Wayne Dwyer. I started reading every positive damn thing I could do until I actually got out the door and got myself some work so I could pay my bills. And,
yeah, and you know what? You were a great introducer for me because you actually gave me the Millionaire Mind book, which was pretty much a big trigger in starting this journey towards bringing this product out. So I owe you some big thanks.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I gave you the Millionaire Mind, and you know, I gave a lot of people that book. And you went to your MMI, as did a lot of my friends. But you were one of the people that really got something from it, and. I know you've taken a journey because of it, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. From the Life Directions class to the, you know, the Warrior Camp. I mean, they managed to bring out a lot of strength that I didn't realize, and a lot of my inner beauty that other people can see, but was so hard and elusive for me to see. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about Harv Eker right now. Harv Eker wrote a book, a bestseller called The Millionaire Mind. And he talks about money mindset, and it was a big thing for myself. That's why I started giving that book to friends, because we all have these money imprints in our head where we all say we want to be abundant and rich, but in our head we're saying money's the root of all evil, and only, you know, rich people are greedy, and we have all these mindsets that keep us from being successful. So it's a really
and that's part of the reason for the product, to change the mindset that thinks that, you know, we can't do what we want to do and that we're not worthy. It all ties together, how that whole mindset, money set, you know, heart set, it's all part of the same being that you are. And finding a way to empower and strengthen yourself is probably the only way that people can actually achieve all the things that they want to and actually keep them. So a lot of people attain success, and then they get scared because they didn't prep themselves for it, you know, on the inside. And then they try to get rid of it. Hence the reason most lottery winners are broke within, you know, a year or two.
So you think they self-sabotage themselves because they have low self-esteem?
I think a lot of it has to do with their ability to see the worthiness and, you know, be able to hold on to the money and use it in ways that actually grow money and empower other people and, you know, themselves along the way. But, yeah, I think that there's a lot of self-sabotage, which is why a lot of people don't achieve what they want. And then they go out and die and going, oh, I wish I would have. And quite frankly, I'm not willing to go out that way. I'm going to go going, yeah, I did it.
You ever heard that thing, the shoulda?
I don't know about the shoulda, but I can tell it's not good.
Yeah, you end up shitting all over yourself.
And everyone else, yeah.
Everyone else, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and, you know, always trying to fix everyone else doesn't work. It just distracts you from what you've got to do for yourself.
You know, it's funny, Karen Lecter, you know, the co-author of Rich Dad Poor Dad, we just spoke with her.
Uh-huh.
She said the same thing you just did. She said, you know what, I asked her, you know, she's worked with, you know, Donald Trump and all these financial people. She's written financial books galore. So, I wanted to ask her that financial question, and that is, where are the markets and where are they going? And she answered in a way I did not expect. She just said, listen, we can't go fix the EU and, you know, all the foreign, you know, the European countries. We can't even fix our own nation. But as individuals, we can fix ourselves and live within our own means and work on our own happiness. And I believe that's exactly what you said about, you know, we can't fix the other guy.
Yeah, it is. Whether it's, you know, our husband or another country, it's the same principle. You need to look in the mirror and fix yourself.
And if you start working on yourself, now, I happen to believe that it's a never-ending deal, okay? You never get to perfection. It doesn't exist. But you can get yourself to the point where you stop worrying about the small stuff, where life becomes happy. Life is kind of one of those rough things. There's no such thing as happy all the time. It's, life's a little fickle, and let's face it, life can be a struggle and life can be hard. But it's really about 10% of what happens to you and about 90% of how you deal with it. Is that correct?
I believe that, and, you know, it's also what you focus on. I mean, if you're always focusing on life as hard, you're going to get more of it. And if you can pick yourself back up and look at what's really going on and tell yourself a different story and create a new possibility, then you're able to change your own life. And when you change your own life, it's a ripple effect because it goes outward to your children, to your family, to your acquaintances, your friends, and then, you know, eventually it rolls out wide and far.
Well, you know, when I first met you, you've always been a fun and funny person, but you were kind of, you were in a different headspace. Can you kind of tell me the story of the transitions that you've made?
Well, I was in the space that it was like, oh, I finally found a job because I've gone through so many different jobs in the IT world that would last a year or less or maybe a little bit more and then something crazy would happen. And so I was under the impression that I actually found a job where I was appreciated, I was paid decently, and I could just settle in. And within a few months, that became apparent that that wasn't the reality of it. So, you know, it became very unsettling, and I wasn't sure what to do because it just seemed like every time I turned around, the rug would be, you know, pulled out from under me. So, you know, I think that the big learning of myself and self-acceptance and self-power came from that last job ending and me actually just taking time out to figure out who I am, what I'm about, what I really want to do with my life, and then taking action towards that.
Right. Well, one of the good things about you when you left that job, you left it empowered instead of defeated. That was a big...
Well, there was a little impeding for a little while, like, oh, geez, what am I going to do now? You know, that you know, you're kind of hoping for some sort of security. And
mm-hmm.
At the time, it was telling me it wasn't in the workplace, but I kept hoping I would find it there. And finally, I've come to the conclusion it just really isn't what I'm meant to do. And what I'm meant to do is what I'm doing exactly right now. So...
And let's go ahead and segue into that, because I want to talk about the product, but let's talk about getting the product. There are people, I just talked earlier on this phone call, and we promised people to talk about the experience of taking a product, inventing a product, and, you know, going through the process of getting it to market and You've done everything from soup to nuts on this thing. So, you know, you've worked in the patent process. You've worked in getting investors. One of the things you've been very good at doing, speaking about Les Brown, you've been able to get people like Les Brown and others in the, let's call it the guru space or the motivational speaker or, you know, or personal development industry to step up and give testimonial to your product, correct?
That's true. But I started at a very basic level with the idea, and I started writing out what I wanted that idea to do, how I wanted it to function. And I really, you know, spent some time on that, and then I started, you know, looking out to what it would take to get a prototype, like a handmade prototype made. And I found someone who would help with that.
Let me stop you.
Pardon me?
Let me stop you right there for a second, because there's a couple things we could assume there. Did you vision board, you know, some of the step, your success on some of that stuff? I know, I believe you're also talking about the fact that you decided to sit down with what you wanted to accomplish and set out actually writing down a plan. But is there a little of both in there? How did that come about?
You know what, I actually didn't start with planning out what I wanted to do as far as the market or any of those things. I was just focused on getting the product specs down, because I couldn't communicate to anyone else what the product would do unless I could clearly communicate it. So that was my first step.
Okay.
Then I began seeking help from coaches and things like that. But what I found was the most effective was Post-it notes. And eventually I started using mind map programs. And I would basically take the high level of what I wanted to do, whether it was the website or the, you know, the sales or the, you know, who I wanted for my leaders to endorse the product or any of those things, and just started building beneath each of them with extra Post-it notes until I had pretty much the walls filled up with this stuff. And from there I was able to figure out which path I wanted to take, who I wanted to have endorse it, how to get it to market, the methods I wanted to use to get it out there. And just then from there I could build an actual plan. So for me it's about, you know, speccing out product, speccing out how you're going to get there, and then creating the plan.
What is a mind map?
A mind map is basically having Post-it notes in the computer that allow you to identify like your main product in the middle, and then you create like spoke wheels off of that main subject. And each of those spoke wheels then contains, one's marketing, one is sales, one is product, one is, you know, endorsements. Another might be strategies, you know, just different main subjects. And then you take those main subjects, such as the sales, and you start breaking out the methods of which you want to sell. So, you know, direct to consumer, direct to wholesale, direct to retail, direct to QVC, HSN, you know, whatever it is. And then you take those and break them down further. How am I going to get to QVC? Well, I need to hire a rep. I need to have, you know, my products ready. I need to have this many products. What's my, you know, criteria from them that I need to meet in order to sell to them, and you just really start identifying the pieces.
Right. Do you remember where you learned mind map?
Actually, I learned it just from a 5-minute tutorial, because I'm very computer driven, and there's not many applications I can't pick up. But for anybody, a Post-it note works the same way, or a, you know, sticky note, whatever you want to call it, and you just use it the same way on the wall, and you start building your subjects underneath and your criteria underneath of the main subject, so you don't need the computer program. Anybody can do it, even tape on a piece of paper if you had to, but you just identify the segments of your product, your project, your, you know, market, what you want to do with it, how you want to get there, and then you're able to build a plan, and from that plan you're able to start asking people to support you in that mission.
Right. I actually learned about mind map from Elizabeth DeRose. She was one of the contestants on the second Apprentice.
Okay.
And she was the youngest product and marketing person at Procter, who worked for Procter & Gamble. She was, that's what she was known for. So she was, you know, she's an expert in product marketing and taking things to market. And that's the system that she used.
Well, there you go.
Or one of the systems, because I saw her use it and we worked on a project together where she used it extensively there. So anyway.
It just really makes it easy for everybody to get a picture of what you want to do, and then you can build the things behind it to support it, whether it's how you're going to contact the people you want to do, who the people you're going to market to are, their demographic, and it gives you the high-level identification, and then you can drill in even further so that you actually have a plan to implement.
You know, it's also taught by a guy named Abraham in a different way. He doesn't call it mind mapping. He calls it looking at any issue from 360 degrees. But mind mapping, I hope there's stuff out on the web because I've never really checked it, but it allows you not only, it's kind of like a 3D 360 degree look, because the first spokes out are just your main stuff. But then you keep adding to those spokes and adding to those spokes and adding to those spokes. Does it ever get overwhelming when you see how much stuff you got to do?
You know, yeah, there's no doubt about it, because especially when you're doing it all by yourself and you don't have your big team on board or whatever, but, you know, an elephant gets eaten one bite at a time, and you just take what you can do and you keep moving towards and through that. You know, but if you don't know the big view, then you have no idea what you're up to, and neither does anybody else, and you can't delegate to anyone to get anyone to help
in things that will not help you.
Yeah, and that way you're clear and focused, you know, and people can buy into what you're doing because you're clear. If you're all over the place, no one can follow you. It's like following the schizophrenic, you know. It's just not possible.
So you have your plan kind of laid out of what you want to do, and one of the big things you were talking about, I believe you were saying you really wanted to make sure that you described the product, because it was an idea in your head for the most part. You wanted to describe the product as thoroughly as possible so that you could explain it to people. Now the issue is here, and we've talked about this many times over the last few years, and that is the fear that you get, and I know a lot of people have this fear, and that is, okay, as soon as I explain to somebody, they're going to steal my idea. And, you can call it lack-mindedness, you can call a lot of things, but there are people that will do that. So what kind of steps did you take to either make sure that you secured things, or did you learn to let things go after a while, or you think it's very important to hold on really tight?
You know what, I've held on rather tight, and just now I'm starting to really, you know, go ahead and start talking about it freely, because I've realized that this takes a lot out of somebody to do something like this. Like, it really takes drive. It takes, no matter what, it takes staying focused on the goal, and not everybody has that. I do have patent protection. I do have, you know, other protections in place, so that's helping, you know, but a great idea without funding doesn't help anybody, and my project needs funding, so now I've just started talking to the angels and the VCs, the venture capital people, and, you know, we're in the second round of Shark Tank for evaluation and just different things like that. But you definitely have to work on your mind to be like, you know what, it's my idea, it's my energy, I'm going to do this. I've put the legal protections in place that are possible, and now it's time to, you know, there's non-disclosure agreements and what have you. But you just have to move, and it's really about staying in motion and not stopping, regardless of, you know, you might have a day where you're like, oh, but you just got to get yourself back up. Like Les Brown says, if you're on your back and you're feeling down, if you can still see up, you can get up. Or he has another one that's great. It's like, if you're going through hell, keep going. You know, so he's got some great ones to remember, for sure.
No, I love Les. He's a great guy and a great motivational speaker, one of the best. Sure. So anyway, okay, let's talk about the protection, because I know patent a little bit. My brother went to go get a patent, an invention he had, and he was telling me that getting a patent pending, not so hard. Really, actually?
No, patent pending is pretty easy. It's when you convert it over to design or utility, where you're really kind of running into where you might need some legal help to get that done and accepted. And typically, you know, real patents are kind of rejected. Provisional patents are something you can file for about $100, but nobody reads it. So it just kind of is a place marker in the line of, you know, who submitted what and who did it first, but you need to convert that within a year or you lose all your rights to international patents and all kinds of stuff. So there's definitely some loopholes that you need some legal help on with that.
I'm guessing you're saying, though, that since it's a simple process and it does have protection built in, that it's something you would just recommend doing?
Yeah, absolutely. But be prepared that within that year, if you have any sort of commercialization or international, rollouts or anything like that, you need to convert that patent over to be a real patent. It can't just sit in provisional forever and really offer any protection.
Mm.
So there's a status of provisional, which is a one-year place marker, and then you begin with the other stuff. And it can take a couple years for your real patent to be issued, but you still need to start that conversion process over to be a real utility or design, type of patent. And I'm not a patent attorney. I've just been through a lot of this stuff already, so.
Right. Yeah, we're not. This is not for use for legal purposes, and if you find it difficult to get your patent pending, don't blame us.
Yeah, pretty much. Find a patent attorney. They know best.
Exactly. Yeah, get yourself an attorney. And all things, I recommend people, real estate, whatever they're doing, get an attorney.
Well, and there's some attorneys that will actually work with you on, pay me later kind of stuff or make payments. I mean, there's different arrangements that you can make with different attorneys. And it's like getting a book published. You just have to keep knocking on the doors till somebody says yes.
Yeah. You don't have to use an attorney for everything, obviously. But get somebody, get to know somebody. Get to know a lawyer so that you have some kind of relationship that you can fall back on. Talking about arrangements, we've talked about this too. You talk about arrangements with people. I have done it. I know you've done it. I've seen other people do it. We get excited about a project, and we need partners, we need money, we need someone, we need PR, we need something. So we go out and we find people that say they can help us. And the first thing they want is 50%.
That is correct. Those are the people you run from.
I don't know if you run, but you definitely don't want to, without being aggressive, you want to stay in your power. You don't want to, I found out, and I think you found out, you don't have to give everything away to get people to work for you.
But the way I look at it is, somebody is already coming at me in such a sharky kind of way. That's not somebody I want to work with. That's somebody that's very aggressive and, out for themselves, and they're not out to actually make the product a success. They're out to just take, a big chunk out of you. It's like the fish that drive by the shark at the bottom. The shark just takes a bite, and the fish keeps swimming, and they don't know that they're bleeding.
Right.
It's the same sort of thing. You just have to really, really look at the agreements. And if you're going to get into an agreement where somebody's taking a percentage, you need to make sure that percentage spells out exactly what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, when they're going to do it by, and what happens if they don't. So a lot of times, getting somebody in a vested sort of situation where they're not taking their payment until they've completed tasks or a certain time that they've actually been in the company working and performing according to the things that you've spelled out.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you end up giving away all your company before you even get to raising money, and then you have nothing left to raise money with.
Well, that's a really good, important point, and that's performance riders. If you're going to, in any deal, I don't care if you're giving 50% away or you're not giving, or you're just paying the person. You need performance riders. You don't want to pay a person up front if they haven't delivered.
Well, yeah, because I've been approached by people who do infomercials and licensing, and they basically come at you with, they'll take 96% and you take 4%. They'll do everything, but in that contract, there's no performance clauses, no clawback provisions if they don't perform. It's just, here, we'll take it. And you really have to read the fine print within that contract to make sure that you're covered as well, because they're definitely trying to cover themselves.
Well, sure. Well, I'm going to speak on their behalf for a second, because I know I get a lot of calls from people. People bring me inventions all the time to look at, because I do investor stuff. So, and to be honest, here's the way it kind of works in the real world. We kind of have this Hollywood mentality. We've all watched too much TV, and we kind of have this feeling that when a PR person for Sony Records goes out into the field and he sees a band playing, and the band is like the best band. Oh, they sound so great and everything. That they run up to him, they say, "We're going to make you $1 million and rock stars and sign you today." And next thing, they're on a private jet on tour. Well, that's Hollywood, but that's not reality, even close. It turns out like this: the PR guy walks into the Roxy, the Troubadours, Whiskey A Go-Go, and she's a band that they were the, you know, the music's too loud, it sounds like crap, and they don't, you know, they don't like the band at all. But there's a line out the door three blocks long for the T-shirts and DVD sales and tickets to get in this thing. The market's already there. It's a no-brainer to sign these people up, right? That's real business. So when you get somebody out there in the business that when they see that you're coming up with an invention that has no sales history, and we see this on Shark Tank all the time, right? You know,
right.
It says, I've already sold 200,000. I have orders on call with Walmart for... It's almost a no-brainer to say, yes, okay, I'll come up with the seed money. But when you just have an idea that has no product history or sales history or any history, most of these guys are going to come to you and say, I want 50% or 90%, because guess what? They are going to be doing the risk-taking also.
Right, and that's fine as long as you're not having to show up each day to do everything. You're not creating yourself a job, and that there's performance clauses within that.
Very good point. But you know, everybody makes those guys the devils. And they're just businessmen, and they're not stupid businessmen either. So
it's true. They are taking a lot of risk, especially if you don't have a sales, you know, record or what have you. So if there's any way you can get some sort of attraction, you know, proof, sales transactions, that sort of thing before you get to those people, then you'll have a stronger position. But still expect that, you know, they are taking the risk and that they are going to try to get as much as they can. But you just need to, you know, be aware. Cover your butt, make sure there's performance clauses, clawback provisions if they don't perform, and, you know, go boldly forward, because they obviously probably, if you've chosen a good firm, have a better handle on getting everything to where it needs to go quickly. And ultimately, it's about who gets to market fast, first, and furious, and who has the coveted positions for distribution who becomes successful.
True. On the other hand, you have chosen... Because I've known you've been working on this, I'm guessing, the last at least 3 years, no?
Two years,
okay. You've been working on this, and you've decided that you're going to scale the Great Wall yourself, and you're going to do the learning curve yourself. And you haven't, though you've had many offers, you've done many meetings, you've sat down with many investors and angels, and you've said a lot of no's.
Yeah, because of, you know, knowing that we don't just have one product, we actually have about 30 products at full rollout. It's not a typical inventor sort of, here, I got one, you know. This one has a long tail on it. So to not have everything lined up in those ways, you know, it's not profitable for me to give up everything before we start. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, if somebody who's a great marketer who can take it and actually do the things that need to be done and is willing to put in the performance clauses, if they approach me, I'm willing to talk to them, because I'm not trying to create a job. I'm trying to be, you know, rich.
Right. Are you doing non-disclosure, non-circumvention
yes.
agreements with everybody?
Yes.
Okay. How do you find that people, especially the bigger wig, you know, the bigger companies, take those? No problem, or?
You know what, when it comes to the investors, most of them are not willing to sign any sort of NDA or, you know, non-disclosures or whatever, because they see $200-$300 deals a month. So they really honestly cannot. But on the same token, you know, you just need to be careful on who you're approaching to make sure they're people of integrity, whether that's in any level of your life.
Well, you know, I used to sign a lot of NDAs for real estate deals. I rarely do them anymore unless it's principal to principal. And this is just a little extra nugget for you out there. If you're signing NCND agreements with, chains of people who know a person who knows a broker, who knows a banker, who knows that kind of thing, what happens is when you sign these things, now you have a spider web of NCNDs around. And you go call Bob, and then Nancy calls you and said, hey, I heard you called Bob. Well, yeah, I met Bob through Bill, and, well, you can't be talking to Bill or Bob because I have NCNDs with non-circumvents with these guys, and you talked to me last week, and now you're talking to those guys. You're circumventing me. It's like, what?
Yeah.
You know, it gets ridiculous. And I've been.
Yeah, it does.
So,
and that's, you know, a lot of it comes back to your own knowing that you're going to achieve what you're up to, because, you know, if you don't keep moving, somebody else will do it. It's almost like energetically the universe knows when you're actually in action versus just talking.
Right. No, that's good. That's true, and remember that 98% of people are sitting on the, you know, 98% of people are talking.
Yep.
They're sitting on the couch watching the 1% talk, and then there's the other 1% that actually does something.
Well, and you know, back to the product side of it, I just thought of something that should really be said, and that is that when you have your idea and you've written it down and you know what you're talking about as far as what you're going to produce, have people that are friends or family sign a non-disclosure and discuss with them. So, would you buy this product? Where would you expect to find it? How much would you pay? Because before you start running around and getting patents and doing product development, you need to make sure there's a market for your product, not a product for your market. So you need to make sure somebody wants to buy it, because it doesn't do any good to create something fabulous that you love that no one else wants.
Well, this is the 101 key to marketing that people miss. You call it nurture marketing, you call it natural selling. Michael Oliver's book on natural selling is a great way to find this kind of stuff out. And that is about actually shutting your mouth and opening your ears and listening to the market to see what the market wants. Then offering
yeah.
what the market wants, as opposed to making something that you think the market should want.
Yeah, very true. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs run into that. Like, I know I want this snow-making device that does it in 4,000-degree heat. Great. And they're like, what? Where are we going to use that? You know, what's the purpose?
Right.
So, yeah, always check with, you know, your market and make sure that somebody wants what you're producing. And biggest thing is, what will they pay?
Okay, have you found sites that you like to hang around for certain things? Like, it could be the social networking sites that you can find people at to find investors, or there are sites where you find demographic information. What are some of the sites that you like to go to, some of your favorite stuff for some of the stuff you're doing?
You know what? I don't have a favorite, because I am just a hunter. And I hunt for what I need, and then I move on.
Mm.
You know, obviously, I'm addicted to Facebook like everybody else. You know, what's my friends doing? But as far as like, oh, there's a great site for demographics, no. That's very much you have to hunt and hunt and hunt, and chances are it's not where you think it is. And there's a lot of information you can buy for demographics, but the challenge is when you don't have a budget, you have to find it without that. So you take the best of what you can find, and you start tracking it. You print it. You go through it that way. But I don't necessarily have a favorite research site.
Okay. So, but you are on Facebook. Have you found any luck on LinkedIn, finding at least connecting with investors or business people?
No, actually, I haven't. I haven't reached out to it either, though, so I don't know that I'm the right person to ask that. I signed up for a bunch of investor groups and things, but there's no guarantee who those people are, because there's no real tracking on them.
Right.
And even when you look up their websites and whatever, you don't see the integrity that you would want to see, where you can come through that with like personal introductions or references from people that say, yeah, that's a great place to work. It's so blind out there for me to be like, wee, and just throwing it out, that I just don't use it.
Yeah, you know, I would disagree with you on that note, but I will agree that it's not something you just jump into and you can just find, because you actually have to dig a lot, because everybody's going to put down something positive in their profile. End of story.
Right.
They're all going to be
right.
The most, integrous person who does the best stuff in the best way in their profile.
Well, and even in the angel groups, it just seems like a lot of spam. And same with the, you know, capital groups and what have you. It's just a bunch of people that are, you know, one person puts up they're looking to fund a deal, and 10,000 people put up, take mine, take mine, take mine. And that kind of approach for me doesn't work with my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I haven't pursued that side. Now, other people, it might work great, but for me personally, it just isn't the path that I'm taking.
What I would tell people to use it for is for finding one-on-one relationships, not for scattering your crap all over the universe. You know, throwing the crap up on the wall to see what sticks and trying to just do it by numbers is a very poor way to do it.
Yeah, that doesn't, I mean, and especially when you're dealing with a, you know, a heartfelt project, you have a certain, whether it's a you know, a candle or a dog leash. It doesn't matter. It's like that's important to you, so you want to protect it like you would a mother or father. You want to make sure you're going the right way with it, not just throwing the noodles on the wall and seeing if it sticks. You know, it doesn't work well for your soul, especially when you're like, oh, but somebody might take it. You know, you're constantly dealing with that in the back of your mind as a person who's bringing something to market.
Okay.
And, you know, for me, the...
did use. Can I mention CEO Space?
Yeah, I mean, I went to CEO Space. There's some great knowledge there, but there's great connections, and I think that that's the real key to CEO Space is that they create a place where people can come and share under non-disclosure, and everybody's there during that week to sort of help you get to the next level.
You get some really good connections there. Do you think you can actually use a place like CEO Space or others to get the final delivery and the whole enchilada?
I can't really answer that without saying that everything takes effort outside of there. That's only 1 week out of, you know, a couple months. Every couple months you get to go back.
Right.
But it's what you do in between that really makes the distinction of whether you're successful or not.
Right.
I think that you can get some things there, but it's all up to you. You end up having to do things outside of there. And if you're looking to one place to do your all-inclusive solution, I don't know if you're going to find it there or anywhere else.
Right, and that's why we're talking to you, because you are the kind of person who's a doer, and whenever there's a gap, you find a way to fill it. Whether it's because...
Yeah, I'm constantly asking myself, what's next? What else? What else can I do? What else? What else? I mean, because you have to, because if you don't, nobody else is going to drive anything forward for you.
Right. Okay, so you're talking to investors. What do you say to investors? Nowadays, the climate is kind of, wow, I'd like to have a promissory note. I'd sure like to have an exit strategy. And you have an invention that you could win or could lose for an investor.
Yeah.
How do you talk to your investors? And even where do you find these guys?
Well, you know what? I found a lot of the investors through, like I went to the SBA, and then they introduced me to, like, locally the Pasadena Angels. And then,
okay,
you know, they referred me to a couple other angel groups. So now I'm in submission and evaluation with them. And then, you know, somebody I have on my team is actually she's a Yale graduate, and she found something that's up in the Bay Area that's a group of investors. And so I went up there a week ago and presented to them, and they were all on board. And now they're going to invest a small amount, you know, like $10,000, $15,000. You hunt, and there's lists available of different angel investors and venture capital people, and each one has a specialty to which they invest, whether it's consumer products or, you know, books or, you know, electronic technology. I mean, there's just each one has a specific profile of what they like to invest in.
Right.
But one of the biggest things that came about is realizing that they're looking for 10 to 40 times their investment dollars back, because they know that the risk that they're taking with an unproven product, service, whatever,
mm-hmm,
you know, if they do 10 at that 40 times return, they're bound to make their money back. And so they balance their risk by having that high return on the one or two companies that actually makes it.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So they might put, you know, 10,000 into 10 pots, but if they're getting, you know, 40% on that one, then they're kind of alleviating that pain of losing.
Right. So do they help? Okay, you've been in front and you've sat down and presented your products to these investor groups.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find it's a laborious project to get ready for those things? Are they tough on you? Do they ask you a lot of questions? Could you kind of run through that?
You know what? Luckily, I've been able to kind of reference a PowerPoint. I don't whip them with the PowerPoint, but I give a highlight, and then I ask questions during the process because I want to make sure that they don't have questions when we leave. And it becomes a, you know, a dog and pony show, and you're doing the same sort of thing. It becomes very repetitious in a way to you, but to your audience, it's the first time they're hearing it. So if you can keep that sort of flavor that you're excited still, that's a better approach, I think, than, and here we are again, you know, like the Visine commercial. So
Oh, I like the way you approach it with the questions. So you do like almost a frequently asked question so that they don't even have to ask them. You've pretty much answered every one that they're going to give you at the end of the presentation anyway.
Yeah, and it all depends on the format that they're allowing you to present in as well, because some has that ability to be question and answer. Some are going to be 7 minutes, and you better just be having it down to a science. And, you know, some are going to be five. Some are going to be that person you meet in the elevator that's going to be that one-minute elevator pitch or less. You know, so you just have to know your stuff, which is part of why doing, you know, the entire spoke view of what you're doing, the mind map or the post-it notes or whatever, because once you've done all your homework of what you want to do, why you want to do it, where you're going to go to get it done and how it's going to be done, and there's not many questions they can ask you that you don't have an answer for, and that's your biggest thing is do your homework.
That's a really good point, because they start having confidence in you that you are one of the going to be the ones that make it, because you've asked all the questions, you've done all the homework, and you've probably made all the calls already and gotten all the figures. So, you know, obviously if I'm an investor and I see some guy up there who's fumbling and bumbling and doesn't know those answers, I don't feel he's ready, even if his idea is good.
Well, and that's where a lot of people make the mistake, thinking they need to get an outside consultant to do the business plan or the executive summary or, you know, whatever device they're going to use to present with, because then the entrepreneur stands up with somebody else's plan, thoughts, and ideas and cannot back it up, and that's where the investors lose confidence.
Oh, absolutely. Wow, that's a million-dollar tip right there. That's super good.
Yeah, do your homework, because no one else can answer it like you.
There you go. So let's talk about your product. You know, I don't want to – we're not all going to sign NCNDs, so only tell us what you want us to know. But I do believe you – aren't you already selling one of your products on –
Yeah, actually. It's called the Affirmations Mirror, and what it is, it's the real-life mirror on the wall that delivers messages to people to keep them moving towards their goals and dreams. And Michael Jackson said it best, you know, if you want to change the world, you got to start with the man in the mirror. And that's what this product is all about. And you customize the messages so that they meet your goals and dreams. And I think that's the difference between, you know, having something that's just sold to you that's pre-programmed, because it's not important to you. So this one makes it very...
Do you have a little booklet that tells them how affirmations should be spoken?
Yeah, and, you know, we have some instructions, we have suggestions, but ultimately it's everybody's own stuff that needs to be dealt with. You know, if they want to say it excited, if they want to say it while they're standing on top of a mountain, if they want to, you know, do the affirmations quietly so no one else can hear and they're still sort of timid with it, it doesn't matter. It's whatever feels right for the person, you know, rather than you must do it this way and if you don't, it's very wrong, you know, no. I think anything that you do to empower yourself, however it comes out, is you.
Right. Well, I just asked that because, you know, Brian Tracy talks about affirmations. He's a big affirmations guy, and he has a kind of a whole guide on, you know, the best impact of the affirmation. Do you not believe that, or you just find that that some people just can't always go with that plan?
You know what? I try not to be so restrictive, because I think that everything is so personal to people. And, yes, you can read a book, but sometimes you become so overwhelmed by the instructions that you just don't do the action.
Yes.
So for me, and that's just me personally, because there's enough people out there telling you how to do it, how to stand, how to, you know, whatever, you can go ahead and follow that. I don't need to rewrite the book.
Right. So your product, I think the product that you have out there is a compact.
Correct. So it's all the technology is contained within, and you're able to put the files, audio files, onto it that you want to hear, like I am strong, I am capable, I am worthy. And then every time you're in a restaurant or you're about to go into a great meeting or, you know, you're about to embark on something that's very scary to you, you're able to put the earphones in and listen to those messages that you've chosen that empower you and make you feel strong and capable of doing whatever is next, or even blocking out negative information. Because, I mean, I go to a restaurant and everybody around me is constantly complaining about somebody did them wrong and, oh, whoa, whoa. And, you know, sometimes you just want to be, like, at peace, just you being you. And so I use those to kind of block out all of the negative input, as well as empower myself
myself before I walk into a meeting.
Okay, so what is the power of the mirror? Because I'm sure people would say, well, I can put that on my iPhone or my iPod and do the same thing. What's the power
right.
of looking into a mirror?
Well, I feel that the power of looking into the mirror is that you're actually looking into your own eyes. You're actually owning what you're saying and feeling it. You can say things, but if you're not seeing yourself, you're just going through the process. And I think that the identification with yourself in the mirror while hearing these great things allows them to penetrate deeper and, you know, into your soul so that you can begin to believe them.
Right. Is there any science on that? Or have you?
There is a bunch of science, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of studies on the effectiveness of mirror therapy, from everything from limb, you know, loss, people learning to learn and accept their bodies with minus a leg or minus an arm or, you know, what have you, to stroke therapy, where people are learning to re-talk and re-identify themselves in the mirror, to affirmation, you know, studies that have shown that people who do affirmations have a more prosperous, more happy, more, you know, loving life by doing them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty of studies. And most of the time when people use a mirror, what they're doing is they're doing a particular function, like they're shaving or they're putting their makeup on or they're, but what's really going on in the back of their head is usually, oh my God, a new wrinkle, a new zit, a new gray hair, a new, you know, whatever that they're not happy with. You're looking for what's missing and what's wrong, and this mirror gives you a chance to look for yourself and look at what's right and really.
I'm addicted to the 10 times mirror.
Yeah. That'll mess you up.
I might look at the 10 times mirror because I want to see my pores. I want to see that.
Yeah. Right. But see, this is, you know, you can do that as well, but then you're not focused on empowering yourself. You're focused on tearing yourself apart.
There you go. Exactly. Exactly. It's a bad habit. My wife always goes, are you in the bathroom in that stupid mirror again? Oh, boy. Because there's something else you've done, and two things. First of all, it is a testament to the product. You've had some, in fact, Les Brown, you've had a lot of large, big-name people step up and endorse your product. And so I want to talk to you about both sides of that. Number one, mention some of the people that have seen your product and said, oh, my God, this is a really incredible product.
Right. Well, Les is one of them. He's actually going to put me on the radio in like a month or so. We've got Mary Morrissey, Greg Reed from the 3 Feet from Gold, Napoleon Hill, Luann Mitchell also. She's from Canada but is also involved with that Napoleon Hill group. Let's see, who else? Marsha Weider from Dream University.
Mm-hmm.
And there's several more. Some of them are not as well known as those people. Susie Pruden, who's been on Oprah, she's actually one of our joint venture partners, so she'll be helping us distribute here shortly. Alana Pratt, who's like very powerful in helping women and even men kind of own their own stuff and find love and power and acceptance in themselves in a different area. So this kind of enhances what she does. So many, many people.
And having the endorsements of these people that actually sit there and they all say to the world, I've looked at this product. This is a great product. This is something I know will work, you know, because most of these guys are motivational gurus, and they don't want to say this product's going to work and put their name on the line if they think it's junk. So
right.
they're out there saying, no, you know, I've been doing this for 20, 30 years, and I'm telling you this is a decent deal here. This is a quality product. I mean, that's great, but now there's the other side. How do you get these testimonials? How do you get this stuff in front of these kind of people?
Well, you know what? That comes back to seizing the opportunities that are presented to you and putting yourself in places where you can have access. Bob Proctor about a month ago was at an event, and I was like, I really want to talk to him. And I was sitting with somebody who actually told me, well, he won't talk to you.
Bob Proctor.
Wrong answer for me. That's like, oh, really? You know? And so I just walked up to him and said, hey, Bob, I have this great idea. Here it is. Listen to it. And he was like, I love this. How much are they? And he whipped out the cash and paid me for it. And we're talking now to try to figure out a way to work together to help even more people. So it's just about, you know, you've got to put yourself in the places where these people are, and then you've got to you know, grow some serious nerve and just get up and ask them. And, you know, again, it kind of comes back to doing your homework on the people. You need to make sure that who you're approaching is actually a good guy, because there's some, you know, not so good guys in every market you go to. So, you know, try to do your homework. Are they a good guy or a bad guy? Are they a good girl or are they a bad girl? You know, because not everybody, even in the empowerment market, is really there for anyone outside of themselves.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of sociopath and narcissists out there, and in every industry, and you know, and the motivational guru industry is could be prone to that. You know, we're not naming any names. Most of the people we've talked about, and a lot of the great guys, and there's some really great guys out there we've met. Les, you know, being one of them.
Yeah.
So I don't want to name names, but Les, you are a great guy. So.
Anyway, yeah.
But we've talked about this ad nauseum, because you know, we love to talk on the phone and, you know, and go over stuff, and we've done it for a few years, and we're always talking about people that ask us, how did you get to know that person? How did you meet that person? And it's always the same thing. I went up to him and said hi, or I called him.
Yeah. A lot of times the calls won't take you where you want, because you got to remember, these people, whether it's, you know, any industry or even reporters, they're getting bombarded nonstop by people. So I find, for me, the most effective is to find a way to get in front of them and actually talk to them for a couple minutes. And, you know, not when they're being bombarded by everybody and their brother. You need to wait till there's a little bit of a break so that they can actually speak to you. I've been someone who will find a woman in the bathroom and begin the conversation, because that's where they're at and they're not being swamped by everybody. You know, you just have to look for the open spot and move in.
I've seen you at a lot of the events. And let me just say that if you go to one event and expect to speak to Bob Proctor and get your thing in his deal, or the guy from, who was the guy that we've, I can't think of his name, from Shark Tank.
Oh, Kevin Harrington?
Kevin Harrington. I've met Kevin a few times. But that doesn't mean I had time to put my, you know, throwing my ideas at him and have him, you know, say yay or nay. But I think you're one of those people that put yourself in a situation quite a lot. Because if you go to one event and expect to speak to this guy, like Kevin, you're going to look like a stalker waiting. Okay?
Yeah.
I know that you go to many events. And every event you go to, you meet a new friend, you meet a couple new friends, you speak to a couple new people, and you and I do this the same way. Next thing you know, you meet a couple people, and they say, oh, I happen to know Rick Frischman, the author, let me introduce you. Yeah, I happen to know Kevin, we're working on a project together, let me introduce you. That happens all the time. It's about you always keeping yourself in the places where these people are and showing up. And, you know, what do they say, 80% of success is showing up?
Well, and keeping your mind in a place that allows you to keep moving, too. I mean, that's another component, because you can show up, but then you get there and you have a fear storm and you don't achieve what you came for. And I think another thing is being really clear of why you're going somewhere, you know.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to the seminar to drink Kool-Aid, drink Kool-Aid. If you're going to the, you know, the location to actually talk to somebody, stay focused on your goal. And don't get caught up in the hype of whatever it is you're doing.
Right.
You'll lose track and you won't achieve what you're there for.
Absolutely. I like both. I'm a seminar junkie. I love motivational speeches. I like to sit down in front of a guy who knows what he's talking about and have him give me a, you know, have him make me write notes furiously, you know, while he feeds me with a fire hose all his great information. I love that. So,
mm-hmm.
But I also love networking.
And you know, that's what I mean. It's like you need to know what your goal is, and if you're able to do both, go for it. But don't get so caught up in the hype of what's going on, whatever it is, whatever scene you're in, that you don't remember why you're there.
Right.
And don't think that they don't put their pants on the same way, or, you know, that they'll go out the same way you will, because ultimately we all go out. And, you know, don't get intimidated, because they actually really are humans. Whoever it is you need to approach, they're actually a human, and they have the same sort of concerns you do. And, you know, that comes back to your conversation with yourself. How do you make yourself feel the strength that you actually possess? And you know, that goes back to the product now, right? So,
well, you brought up the point about doing your homework, and this is where you and I are, again, on the same page. What happens is you come up to somebody, and I always tell people what you need to do a lot of times is, you know, they have so many people wanting, you know, asking them for stuff. It's, you know, the law of reciprocity, and it's all, how can you help me? And there's nothing you have that you can give back. So half the people will go up without having anything to give back and just hope that the person listens to them. And then there's a half of people that won't even go because they don't have anything to give back. So that doesn't work. That, I don't think either of those scenarios work very well. So
and, you know, if you really want to see what these people are up to, just go around with them for a day and look at everybody who's pulling on them for something and just understand why your phone calls go unanswered. I mean, I spent a couple days with Les Brown, and, my God, everybody and their brother has something they want him to endorse or to sell or to buy or to, you know, and I don't know how any of them keep up with the amount of stuff that's coming at them.
They don't. You know, they kind of, I think they go after the person who shows the most respect. I get all my interviews by going through the channels that they ask me to go through. I've asked Les many times, hey, can I get an interview with you? And he's like, said, sure, call my office. So I call the office. I go through the, you know, the person there. I get, you know, I make one or two, three attempts. I just got an interview. It took me a year and a half to get. But it was because...
Yeah, and that's persistent
and very respectful.
Yeah, I agree with that, you know. There's definitely something to that respect versus, like, overpowering. No one wants to be bullied. I don't care what age you are. No one wants to be bullied. And, you know, and definitely persistence, because there's going to be more no's than there are yeses. But if you give up too soon, then you're failing everybody who you would have served by bringing out your product, book, or service.
Right. Well, let me finish the point about having something to give in return, because I know you've done this too. Once you get to know one of the people, find out what they're hot. What are they trying to? What are they selling? What are they trying to do? What are they trying to accomplish? With a motivational speaker, they're looking for connections to speak more. To, you know, to, the more speaking engagements they get, the better. Or they're looking for publicity. So,
right.
Particularly in my case. I have an audience that I can go up there, and it may fit a particular speaker or may not. But I always
right.
let them know, listen, let's see what I can do for you. If I can do something
yep.
for you, would you be willing to do something for me?
Well, I don't know if I would go in with that same, you know, kind of, you're going to do for me after I do something for you, just because that just doesn't, I don't like inventory sort of held over my head.
Right.
Do you know what I mean by that?
No, I
this now you owe me kind of stuff, I don't like that. So I don't operate that way. That may work for you, but I just do things, and I just find that by doing whatever it is I'm doing, that I'm helping more people and that good things come from it.
No, that's a good point. I actually, because of what you just said, what I tell all these speakers and gurus and authors is I do not do affiliations. I do not want to sell your books or get a dime for any of the books that we sell because of your interview with me. You know, I'm looking for a whole different deal, and that is ad revenue, because I put out very valuable content. So the first
right.
things I talk to a speaker or author about is, I'm not going to do an infomercial for you. You need to give me some valuable stuff, and then we'll promote you.
Right.
So now it's an arm's length deal where it's a win-win for both of us. I get wonderful content. So 90% me, 10% promotion. And they've got they hit a new bunch of clients, and you know, get the word out more. So
yeah, in that case, everybody's winning.
Right.
But if I went in with the mindset of like, well, I'm going to give you this pretty pen, and you better give me this back. I can't operate that way because I don't want to be operated on that way.
Yeah, no, I apologize if I made that assumption. That's definitely not the way to do it.
Yeah.
So anyway, so now you've gone in and you've made great connections, and people not only you build rapport. I know you've built rapport with many of the speakers out there over time. You've become friends with many of them. Mm-hmm. And they've looked at your product, they've invested in your product, they've bought your product, they've done testimonies for you.
Right.
Okay. Then I guess the last thing you need to do is have a really good package together with all this, you know, a good website and package and marketing to take care of the next piece.
That's yeah. And that's kind of where we're at. I mean, is we're raising the funds to really roll this thing out, complete, you know, certain aspects of the other products and just really make it a success so that everyone on the planet can actually experience the difference of, you know, what this product can do for them individually.
Right. Well, you know, I think it's a great product. I think you're a wonderful person and a hard worker, and if anybody's going to get this done, you are. I've seen you grow immensely since when I first met you. And how did this go for you? I know you were a little nervous about you don't do interviews. Is that correct?
Well, I did one a couple weeks ago, so this is number two.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't mind. I'm just not someone who's like, look at me, look at me, look at me. I don't have that mentality, but I'm using who I am to get the word out because there's no one else out there that's me and no one else doing what I'm doing. And so I've come to the conclusion that I have to show up fully if I want what I want to happen fully.
Well, let me just say that you did an excellent job. I know you're worried, like, what value do I have to impart? Well, you have a lot of value to impart. You did a really great job. It was a great interview, and it's always a pleasure talking to you anyway. So let's let everybody know where they can find your stuff.
Sure. You can go to the website at www.affirmationsmirror.com with the S in the middle, so affirmationsmirror.com.
Affirmationsmirror.com. And the name's Lisa McCarthy. If you're out there and you'd like to call Lisa and get in touch with her for any kind of deals or partnerships, please get a hold of her at, where's that, Lisa?
AffirmationsMirror.com.
There you go. Lisa, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, too, JW. And I hope everybody gets something out of this that can actually help them achieve their dreams.
I'm sure they can. You gave a lot of great information.
All right. Well, have a great day, and thank you.
Thank you. Everybody, have a great day and a better tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Yay!
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to JW on Purpose with JW Najarian. You can find JW on Purpose at jwonpurpose.com. JW on Purpose is the property and is a trademark of Meta Media Group, and this audio is copyright 2011, and all rights are reserved.